WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Thursday, February 9th, 2017. I really hope you all are having a fantastic week out there, and we hope to make it a bit better this afternoon as we have a ton to talk about throughout this hour. On today's Current Sports, we will talk about a brawl that took place at the Garden in New York last night concerning one of the biggest names, one of the biggest bad boys in hoop history. And the drama continues when it comes to the New York Knicks. Yeah, we'll tell you what happened. Crazy, crazy night. Went viral. Everyone's talking about it. We will also talk about a player that was projected to start for Michigan State football next season, who has decided to call it quits. We had to table that conversation because many of you yesterday wanted to talk about, of course, the big rivalry game between Michigan and Michigan State. But we will talk about this name deciding to quit the game of football for MSU. Don't miss that. And we will also invite to the show Ryan Slocum, sports reporter and anchor for ABC 12 out in Flint Town. Ryan was in the house in Ann Arbor, in Auburn Hills, to witness the ceremony, the really cool ceremony concerning Zeke. That's right, Isaiah Thomas, the Pistons honoring Thomas and his legacy with the franchise. Pretty cool moment as Ryan was in the house for that. He'll talk about that ceremony, which took place at halftime of the Detroit Pistons and LA Lakers game. And later on in the show, we will have Throwback Thursday for you, and we'll talk about the possible scenarios that could lead to the Detroit Red Wings. That's right, the Winged Will possibly making the playoffs. We know that accomplishment is in serious, serious jeopardy right now. If you want to be a part of today's Current Sports, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet us at WKAR_sports, or tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Without further ado, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. Spartan football is right around the corner as the annual green and white game has been set for April Fool's Day, April 1st, 2017. The game is set to start at 3 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. This game came as a surprise, I should say, as, you know, usually Spartan fans look for this one to take place later in April, but MSU is likely trying to get rid of the memory of last season, so why not push that up as early as possible, right? Now, for those of you that don't remember, the Spartans finished last season with a 3-9 record. After starting the season 2-0, the Spartans' first game of the 2017 campaign will take place on September 2nd at home against Bowling Green. The Michigan State women's basketball team will be in Iowa tonight, taking on the Hawkeyes at Carver Hawkeye Arena, a 7 p.m. tip time that can be viewed on the Big Ten Network. This is the first and only meeting between these two teams this season. The Spartans were able to defeat the Hawkeyes twice last year. Now, MSU is on a 3-game win streak, while the Hawkeyes enter the contest losing 2 of their 3 last games. Now, the matchup to watch will be Tori Jankowska of the Spartans versus Ali Distaroff of the Hawkeyes. Jankowska is averaging just under 22 a game and 8 boards, and Distaroff is averaging 16 points, 5 rebounds. That should be a fun one to watch. Again, Spartans Hawkeyes, 7 p.m. on BTN. The Michigan Wolverines women's basketball team, have they been great or what this year? They were able to defeat Purdue last night by a final score of 72-62, a 10-point dub. Now, the Wolverines were led by Kaiser Gondrzik, who had 25 points, 6 boards. As you remember, Kaiser was the high school girls basketball player who had 72 points in one game last season. She has been a great compliment to, of course, Caitlin Flaherty. Now, Gondrzyk was 9 of 13 from the field and 4 of 7 from three-point range.
On the floor, drives right, dish across for Thome. Hallie with a tough catch, back to Gondrzyk, cutting down the lane, left hand off the glass and good.
The Wolverines were able to hold the Boilermakers star guard, Ashley Morissetti. That name rings a bell. She lit it up on the Spartans earlier this season. They held Ashley to just 8 points and 3 boards. Morissetti was just 4 of 13 from the field and 0 of 4 from behind the arc. Morissetti averages just under 16 points per game. The Wolverines' next contest will take place at home on Sunday against the 5-18 Wisconsin Badgers. The L.A. Lakers visited the Detroit Pistons last night at the Palace of Auburn Hills, a place where the Lakers have felt a few nights of anguish, notably going 0-5, I should say, in the NBA Finals when that took place, remember, in 2004. Last night was another painful loss for the Lakers as Andre Drummond's 24 points, 17 boards, a routine double-dub for him, paced the Pistons to a 121-102 win.
Lakers here for the final time. Pistons inside. Andre catches the lob and jams.
And the Pistons also honored all-time great Isaiah Thomas during halftime as a celebration of the final year that Detroit will be playing at the Palace before moving downtown. Zeke was a big reason why the Pistons were so successful in the late 80s and early 90s and leads the Pistons in all-time points scored, steals, and assists.
He set the stage in the Windy Cities, St. Joe's, Chicago, then blew up the gym in Hoosier Land, Indiana. Number 11, the Shake and Bake Assassin. Bez is the 6'1", married son. Back where he won, because he's a Bez.
Ah, my man, 50 Grand Mason. Is there a better in-house PA announcer than Mason? Gotta love him. We'll have more on Zeke later on in the show when we invite Ryan Slocum of ABC 12 to the show. Charles Oakley bought tickets for the New York Knicks-LA Clippers game last night in New York and wanted to give Knicks owner James Dolan a piece of his mind. Now, Oakley was sitting a few rows behind the boss man and allegedly aggravated Dolan enough for him to order security to escort Oakley out of the garden. Of course, Zen Master Phil Jackson, he tried to calm down the former NBA enforcer after he got into a shoving match with security guards. Now, according to NYPD, Oakley punched 3 Madison Square Garden employees and was charged with 3 misdemeanor counts of assault and 1 count of criminal trespassing. We will have more on that story in just a moment. Coming off a controversial 3-2 OT loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets on Tuesday, the Red Wings will be back in action tonight to take on the red-hot Washington Capitals in the nation's capital. These two teams last met on November 18th, where Washington won a tight one by a final score of 1-0. Despite lackluster season thus far, I should say, for the Wings, they sit just 5 points out of a wild card spot and 6 points out of the third and final playoff spot in the Atlantic Conference. Red Wings fans, there is still hope. They always find a way, don't they? Maybe this season. We'll see. A total of 15 players within the Detroit Tigers organization will be making their way for the World Baseball Classic, starting in early March to play for their respective countries. Some of the more notable players include Michael Fulmer, Ian Kinsler, and Alex Wilson for the U.S. of A. Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez, Francisco Rodriguez, and Bruce Rondon will be lacing them up for Venezuela. Fans can see Kinsler, Fulmer, and Wilson starting on Friday, March 10th, when the United States takes on Colombia for the first game. Cabrera and company will take the field on that same Friday as they take on Puerto Rico. And the legendary Bob Costas is stepping down from hosting the Olympics for NBC Sports, as he announced on the Today Show this morning. Mike Tirico is in line to replace the 64-year-old Costas at the Winter Olympics in Korea next year. Tirico will also take over hosting duties of Football Night in America while Costas remains with NBC Sports and will step in when called upon. Now, the Rio Games were Bob's 11th as NBC's primetime host. Definitely going to miss Bob Costas rocking out the Olympics. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and be a part of today's show, you know that number. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, let's start the show. All right, folks, I tell you what, we've got a very hot show for you today. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, Ryan Slocum is going to join the show around 1:30 to talk about who I believe is the greatest Piston of all time. That's right, Zeke, Isaiah Thomas. You know that name. He was honored at halftime of the L.A. Lakers and Detroit Pistons game last night. The Pistons with the dub. Good win for them as they try to fight for the playoffs, a 121-102 final there. Ryan was in the house to witness that moment. And you know what? I want to open up our phone lines right now because I want you all to comment on the legacy that is Zeke. That's right. Again, I consider him to be the best player in the Detroit Pistons franchise history, okay? And I felt like the tribute last night was fitting. What's your favorite Isaiah Thomas memory? I want to know that. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before we bring Ryan on, though, I want to start this first segment by talking about a pretty riveting moment that took place at the Garden yesterday. Last night on national TV, in a game which really took second fiddle to what occurred during the game, in the stands to be exact. Folks, I'm not sure if you saw this, but as I mentioned in the headliners, former Knicks great Charles Oakley was arrested and charged with three counts of assault following an altercation in the stands near team owner James Dolan at Madison Square Garden on Wednesday night. That is how we start today's current sports.
Looking over there, apparently there's a
Charles Oakley over there,
Mike. Height in the stands. Charles Oakley is involved in something. They need security in a big way. Security is there. Oakley now being taken off. And this is an ugly thing to see about a guy who played here for over 10 years, a terrific player. Oakley and the Knick organization have not seen eye to eye recently. Oakley been very critical about them.
This is the scene. Charles Oakley obviously involved with security. Now our own Ian Begley, who covers the Knicks for ESPN here in New York, basically said Charles Oakley attempted to get near James Dolan. Phil Jackson did accompany him back to the tunnel and is trying to calm him down. Oakley was quoted as saying this is baloney, basically.
Yes, the incident occurred during a stoppage in play as Kristaps Porzingis was shooting free throws in the first quarter against the visiting LA Clippers. And then all of a sudden the camera pans toward Charles Oakley just losing it. Flipping his wig, he pushed the security guard, he's arguing, who knows what is being said at the time. And a police source actually told ESPN that Oakley had purchased a seat a few rows behind James Dolan, team owner, and that Oakley made comments at the owner, who eventually had security escort him from the arena. Oakley said at a New York restaurant after his release from Midtown South Precinct shortly past midnight last night, quote, what happened is me and my four friends went to the game tonight. to watch the Knicks and Clips. We did sit down trying to have a good time. Next thing I know, I was asked to leave the building. I asked why, and they said, you have to leave because someone ordered you to leave. Now I'm like, whoa, I've been here 4.5 minutes. I'm a Knicks fan, played here 10 years. I love the Knicks. I love New York. This is my heart. I wish them all the luck and success on the basketball court. I don't know why I'm not welcome to the Garden. Wow. It's a story that has sent shockwaves through the sporting community. One that I instantly knew was going to be a hot topic everywhere. CNN talked about it. I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. ESPN is leading headlines everywhere on ESPN, Fox Sports, everywhere. You can't turn your head without seeing this story. And, you know, this is just another chapter to the drama that has been the New York Knicks this season. I mean, not too long ago. I mean, we're talking like 2 days ago. I saw that Phil Jackson decided to go on Twitter once again and call out and take another public shot at star forward Carmelo Anthony in a tweet. Yes, a tweet. A tweet coming from, oh, I should say referencing, an article from The Ringer. And that's basically criticizing, well, I should say the article coming from the Bleacher Report, written by Kevin Ding. And I read the article, and I believe that, you know, the article, which is, by the way, very, very critical of Carmelo Anthony. But hey, he's a columnist. Kevin Ding is a columnist. This is what he does. This is how he gets paid. It's his job. I get that, okay? He can write whatever he wants. Whether you disagree with it or not is totally up to you. It's your job to do that. I love the article from Kevin Ding, though, and it kind of, you know, it's entitled, quote, Phil Jackson, Knicks doomed by wanting Carmelo to be something he's not, end quote. A very thought-provoking article that I encourage those who haven't read it to give it a look-see. And I thought it really broke down just the mentality that, you know, you can't really change a superstar, you know? You can't really inject competitiveness or the want and will to win into a superstar. You're either born with that or you're not. And Carmelo is totally a really gifted player, really gifted player. But just won't be a winner due to multiple reasons, which I won't dive into right now. But going back to Phil went on Twitter and said that, quote, Bleacher's Ding almost rings the bell. Clever pun, Phil. But I learned you don't change the spot on a leopard, another clever pun, Phil, with Michael Graham in my CBA days. That's the tweet that Phil put out. And a lot of people forget that Phil Jackson's coaching history does have roots in the CBA. And I didn't even know that until yesterday. I had to do some research on that. And the column details, again, the Anthony Jackson dynamic and questions Anthony's desire to win. But you don't put that out in the public. I don't know what Phil is trying to accomplish here, and I feel like with every public comment, with every tweet about Anthony, a lot of people are losing a lot of credibility. I should say Phil Jackson is losing a lot of credibility from a lot of basketball fans that once praised him for his genius as a coach on the sidelines. I mean, we're talking about a man who won 6 with the Bulls, 3 with the Lakers, has coached some of the greatest players of all time like Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, Scottie Pippen, and oh yeah, the GOAT, Michael Jordan. But this fiasco just makes Phil Jackson look like a complete and total idiot, creating a distraction that just doesn't need to be there. So you got Phil calling out Melo, and this whole Carmelo Anthony and Phil Jackson beef going back and forth. Oh, and by the way, the New York Knicks aren't that great of a squad. You know, the Knicks really need help. Again, they've got a superstar in Melo on a max contract. Also, one of the most exciting young players in the NBA in Kristaps Porzingis. I guess that's a shining light there. But, you know, they're 6-19. In their past 25 games, not a great team, and now you add this whole Charles Oakley situation. Oakley, a man who has not had a great relationship with the upper echelons of the Knicks organization for quite some time now. And I do believe that the New York Knicks have treated Charles a bit unfairly in his post-basketball career. And I think the fans echo that sentiment, seeing as though when Charles did get ejected from the game in the stands last night, you heard the Charles Oakley chants. And the Knicks decided to, I should say the Knicks PR Twitter page, I don't know if you guys saw this, but New York Knicks PR decided to put out a tweet concerning Charles Oakley and tweeted, quote, "Charles Oakley came to the game tonight and behaved in a highly inappropriate and complete abusive manner. He has been ejected and is currently being arrested by the New York City Police Department. He was a great Knick, and we hope he gets some help soon," end quote. I don't know why the Knicks PR department felt the need to send out this tweet. Especially the last part. He was a great Knick, and I hope he gets some help soon. Well, looking at the Knicks record, I really hope this franchise gets some help soon and gets its mind right, because it's become laughable now. The New York Knicks have become the laughingstock of not just the NBA, but of professional sports right now. It's really ugly. I understand that Charles Oakley right now is on Stephen A. Smith's ESPN radio show and is making his first. Well, he hasn't made his first public comment since the incident. I read to you, the comments that he made at a restaurant a little past midnight after he posted bail. But I guess this is his first official interview on ESPN concerning what took place last night. But Charles Oakley is a guy who is very well respected when it comes to New York Knicks fans. You know, the 90s for the Knicks. No, this is a franchise during that time period, never won an NBA championship. A lot of that has to do with the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan. But they were willing to stand behind their team back in those days like they deserved one, or like they had already won one. And Charles Oakley was a beloved figure by the fans. And it amazes me how, since Oakley had decided to hang up the jersey and hang up the sneaks, the Knicks have done ideally nothing to acknowledge his contribution. He's a fantastic player. During his 10 seasons with the Knicks, 9 times he made it to the Eastern Conference semis. Pretty impressive stuff. And I also want to say this, too. It didn't surprise me watching Oak go off last night, because Oak has a history with just being a rowdy dude. You know, just kind of off his rocker a little bit, right? You know, if he's got a problem with you, there's been many stories of Charles Oakley on and off the court. If he's got a problem with you, there's been many stories where he just goes up to guys and just slaps them, you know, with no remorse. Just kind of crazy, kind of crazy. Who knows how this story is going to play out? You know, if I had to guess, it's going to end up with Carmelo Anthony. You know, because yesterday for me, when I saw that story about Phil Jackson sending out the tweet, yesterday for me was the final line. If I'm Carmelo Anthony, you know, if you don't want me here, cool. I'm chucking up the deuces. I'm gone. You know, send me somewhere. I will no longer be a part of this organization. I've tried. Totally out of line what Phil Jackson is doing. Then you add the record into the equation. Then you add what took place last night with Charles Oakley. It's become truly laughable. Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, I know you saw what took place last night. The game was certainly secondary to that moment. Just thoughts on that moment and the New York Knicks franchise as a whole this season. It's been crazy.
It is sad, too, because it was a good game last night, 119-115, the final score in that one. But at the same time, no, this Knicks franchise has been trending downwards for so long, I can't even remember it. And it started, actually, when they gave Melo this big, juicy contract in the first place. People forget that Amare Stoudemire used to be the franchise face of the New York Knicks. And people tend to think that he declined as soon as he got to New York. He had two excellent seasons in the Knicks uniform. The thing is, once Mel got there, I've said it for a long time, Mel does not make teams great. In fact, I think he's a detriment to them. With that being said, the only thing you could do to exacerbate having a ball hawk and a megalomaniac on your team is having another one in the ownership. And that's what Phil Jackson is. He going back and forth with his own locker room. Keep it in-house. Either trade the guy, and I know he's floated around, but don't make that public. Just get him either off the block, get him into a different uniform, or let it rest. Charles Oakley, listen, if you're a Knicks fan, you have a right to be disgusted with how this franchise has taken its turn. At the same time, I like Charles Oakley. I loved watching him in the early 2000s. Let's make one thing clear, though. The guy should have been arrested after that game. He did punch three security guards. It's part of the reason you can love him. I'm cool with that. I'm a big Dennis Rodman fan. I love Ron Artest or
Oakley
World
has to be
Panda Lover, whatever his name is. But, you know, the thing is, it's cool to like a guy for being a tough guy. Oakley, I respect the action, I respect the toughness, I respect all that 80s, 90s grit that we love so much. At the same time, this is the first thing that I don't have the problem with the Knicks organization doing in a while, although I'm with you. The PR tweet, that's so stupid.
Come on, man.
Somebody needs help. Either somebody decides they need help or they don't. That's not for you to say as a member of a PR staff.
You don't need to put that out. You don't need to put that out, period. Just we all saw what happened. You don't need to make a statement about what happened. But the Knicks the Knicks just haven't given Charles Oakley any credit for just that time in the 90s. I mean, Charles Oakley was a fantastic player and a great compliment to the great Patrick Ewing back in the day. But you look at it and, you know, you say to yourself, you know, you just ask yourself why. And the reason why is because the owner, James Dolan, just does not like Charles Oakley, regardless of how big and what Charles Oakley meant to the New York Knicks during that time period. And he's a guy, James Dolan is a petty guy. You know, he's a guy that, okay, if you don't like me, I don't like you. And we will not acknowledge you despite the foundation that you helped build us in New York at the Garden here. So it's petty, but that's just the way it's going to be. And Oak is constantly going to be salty about that. He has constantly come out and said, you know what, I want to sit down with James Dolan. It would just probably be a bad idea, but I remember when Oakley came out and said, you know what? It's just me and you. I want me and you to sit down and have a discussion in a locked door. That sounds like it's about to be a brawl, and somebody may end up on a milk carton after that meeting. But it's just how it's going to be, you know? But this is just another chapter to a bad, bad book this season for the New York Knicks. What do you folks think? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before we hit our first break, I want to bring up this story because it's one that I think, how should I put this? It sort of gives you a glimpse into how a lot of student athletes feel, but many aren't willing to take this route because you're talking about your scholarship on the line, basically, right? And it's a reason why I commend this young man, because it takes a lot of gusto to make a move like this. But you guys know the story that I'm about to bring up here, and that being projected starter Tayo Lukusa, who this week quit the Michigan State football team after his freshman campaign, a major loss to that Michigan State offensive line. Lukusa was going to be a force on that line for Michigan State next season. Chris Solari of the Detroit Free Press chatted with Lukusa, and I reached out to Lukusa. I haven't heard anything back, but I would love to get him on our show to talk about why he decided to walk away from the team. But a direct quote coming from Chris Solari's article via Freep.com, quote, "I really haven't been in love with football since I was in high school. It's been a while, probably since I was a sophomore or junior. I went home for Christmas and had a great time with my family up north, just being away from football and doing other things and working out and playing basketball and running. I have been thinking about not playing for a long time. I finally just decided that I'm going to go through with it and kind of weather the storm, whatever it brings, end quote. And this is a direct glimpse into what a lot of student-athletes struggle with. I've talked to student-athletes about it. Heck, we've had some PAs and interns who are a part of Division I athletics on that scale that I've talked to about this subject of having to balance a full-time academic schedule as well as trying to train and work out and practice. Being a part of a Division I program is not easy. You know, I mean, let's be real here. Who really would enjoy waking up at 5 a.m. to go to workouts? Then you have to go to class up until what? Probably from like 9 till, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, maybe get a meal in between, right? Then after that, you go to practice. You practice 2 hours. You may do another lift after that. And then you go home, go to bed, and wake up and do it all over again. It can be draining to be a student-athlete. Now, I understand these student-athletes are getting their education paid for, right? That's a beautiful thing. I wish I had my education paid for when I attended Michigan State University. I'm still paying Sallie Mae. I get that. But the schedule, my schedule in college was nowhere near that of a Division I student-athlete that was a part of a Spartan football team or a Spartan basketball team. Nowhere near that. I don't know how some of these young pups do it. I admire it. It's truly admirable. And Tyo Lucuso, you know, he looks at this and says, you know what? This is so draining that my love of the game has just dwindled. It's just not fun anymore. And I feel like even, we're not even just talking about college athletics here. I mean, just looking at youth sports today in America and how specialized sports have become a thing now. If you're really good at one specific sport, I mean, it's gone out of days where we see a multifaceted, talented 4 or 5 star athlete playing basketball, football, and baseball, or running track, you know, playing at least 3 sports. Gone are those days. And again, I constantly bring up, you know, I watched a documentary at all costs on Netflix that profiled the AAU basketball system here in America. And I'm watching these young kids who are sophomores and juniors and seniors in high school endure a rigorous year-round schedule, a schedule where they have like 1 month off out of the 12-month year where they get to just relax and be a kid. And that can be mentally draining. So it takes a lot of guts to make a move like this. And I commend Tyo Lucuso. If it's not fun for you anymore, because it's fun. A lot of kids like it though. I mean, there's two sides to this entire thing. A lot of kids, you know, some of them like waking up at 5 a.m. and working out and having that crazy schedule. I just don't know a lot of them. But at any point where it stops being fun and you're just going through the motions, it is time to peace out and do something else. I don't blame this young kid at all. And it amazes me how a lot of people out there, the cowards behind keyboards, as Tom Izzo likes to say, a lot of people out there, when they saw this article, they immediately went on Twitter and chastised them. I'm not even going to go there because that would probably be a whole nother show. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite Ryan Slocum, sports reporter and anchor for ABC 12 out in Flint Town. Ryan was at the Palace last night to witness, that fantastic tribute given by the Pistons organization concerning Isaiah Thomas. That and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, call in if you want to be a part of today's show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We've got Ray from Indiana on to talk about, I believe, the Pro Football Hall of Fame and a big name that he is very thankful that he finally got in, Kurt Warner. Ray from Indiana. Ray, how you feeling now that your man Kirk will be a soon-to-be Hall of Famer?
Well, I'm very, very happy. It was way overdue, but I tell you, there was a couple of stories I wanted to tell you real quick. You have to be up there with David Baker, this big heavy set guy, like 320 pounds. He knocks on your door, they videotape it, okay? They put 15 people up in a hotel wherever the Super Bowl's at, okay? And the 10 of them don't get in. They call them and tell them they got to come back next year. And the five that get in, they knock on your door. Well, you got to be there between 3:30 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, Warner was running late, and so was Terrell Davis. And Davis has been waiting 10 years. And they almost run their cars into each other trying to get up the hotel room because they were running late. They went to a restaurant or whatever. I don't know what. But anyways, Davis rolled his window down, and he said, "Who the hell almost hit my car?" And he said, "Well, that's you, Kurt. How you doing?" He said, "Well, we got to get up there." And the guy, the chauffeur, says, "Get up there. We'll take care of your cars," you know, the chauffeur man. So anyways, he's talking about David Baker. He said Sunday that he was one of the he was the commissioner of the arena football when he was trying to struggle to get into the NFL. And now this guy's knocking on my door, inviting me into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What are the chances of that, buddy? Sir, slim and none. God was in on that, right?
What a story. Ray, where did you see that story at?
Well, I didn't. He talked about it Sunday morning.
You know, gotcha.
Before the Super Bowl, he talked about it. You know, they were talking, and they were all giving him a standing ovation. The people up there, you know, they were all pulling to get him in, too.
So Terrell Davis and Kurt Warner almost hit each other's cars.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny stuff.
And then the guy that's knocking on your door was the commissioner of the arena football. What are the chances of all that happening?
That is so random. Kurt deserves it. You know, I knew he was going to get in this year. I mean, it was just a matter of time. I will tell you one name that did shock me. And I think it's a crime that he did not get in, and I think he deserves to go off about it, is T.O. You know, I just didn't understand. I don't understand how, when you look at the numbers of T.O., Isaac, how he does not get in on at least the second ballot, not let alone the first. I mean, I'm still puzzled about that.
I already ranted about it.
So many teams, I didn't like his attitude.
Well, that's beside the point, though. See, this is the thing. This is exactly the conversation we have when we discuss T.O. The Hall of Fame, I get it. Character is a big thing, you know, and that bodes well for any pro athlete who also rips it up on the gridiron. But it's not about that. He put up numbers that are just mind-blowing.
Well, I'm a proponent for taking it.
I agree with that, but also you got to have the right attitude when you're playing that team sport. Warner was behind. He was a second stringer all of his career, practically.
I hear you, Ray, But that's not a qualification on getting into the Hall of Fame.
Anybody that played with Warner didn't say.
I'm not comparing.
It doesn't have to be between those two, though.
No.
Kurt Warner is an exemplary guy. Nobody can deny that he's the epitome of what you want your quarterback to be in the NFL. But T.O., listen, I'm all for judging character, things like that. It should factor into the consideration. This isn't somebody who, let's face it, killed dogs or who's hit somebody with his car when he was drunk.
This dude is just really arrogant.
Who's egotistical.
Right.
God bless him. I mean, forget all of the crimes that other players commit. The thing is, T.O. is second in the NFL ever in receiving yards, third in receiving touchdowns, inarguably the second or third greatest receiver of all time. And you know what? For all the media members who voted against him, he gave you some of the best headlines, the most read stories, the most watched videos ever in NFL history. T.O. should be in the Hall of Fame. He should have been first ballot.
I agree.
Hey, I wanted to bring up about the Super Bowl, too.
Real briefly, man, we got our guest on.
They dominated that game. Why they went completely away with the running game? When you had chances to make New England use their timeouts, you're down on the 22-yard line. You got they already used their first timeout. You can make them use their other two timeouts. You kick a field goal, you're up by 11. I'm not saying Tom Brady didn't do a lot of great things, but I'm saying he should have never been in that opportunity to win that. You know, they were like 0-1, 32 teams trailing like that going into the last quarter.
Yep. I hear it. Ray, thank you for the call.
All right, buddy.
517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. Here's a dear friend of ours, and certainly a man who knows his basketball. He's a sports reporter and anchor for ABC 12 out in Flint Town. He was in his house to witness Isaiah Thomas honored at halftime of the Detroit Pistons and L.A. Lakers game. And I believe, can we play that snippet one more time, Isaac, for our listeners?
He set the stage in the Windy Cities, St. Joe's, Chicago, then blew up the gym in Hoosier Land, Indiana. Number 11, the Shake and Bake Assassin. This is the 6'1 Mary son. Back where he won, because he's a bad.
Yeah, so I can't give him an intro like Mason just did Isaiah last night. But here he is, Ryan Slocum, sports reporter and anchor for ABC 12 out in Flint. What's up, Ryan?
Mason Jr. That was beautiful. Appreciate
you like that? That's I can't even. I'm nowhere close. Nowhere close to Mason.
No one can touch Mason, man. And nobody.
I'm telling you, man. He the best in-house PA announcer in sports. And first off, Ryan, can you take us to last night? Halftime of that game when the Pistons honored Zeke, what was the atmosphere like? What did Isaiah have to say? What was the exchange like between Blaha and Thomas? Just take us through the whole night.
Yeah, you know, I've been to a couple of these things where Zeke has been back in town. I was lucky enough as a kid to be in the house when they retired his jersey back in, I believe it was 97, 96 or 97, whatever it was. So, you know, I've been to a lot of these, and they're all very special. And being that it was in the Palace, I had to be there one last time, you know. Mm. It wasn't as special as those other ones because, obviously, you know, it's been a long time, and it wears off after a while. But the fans that were there, not the best crowd in the world because, you know, the Pistons have been struggling a little bit. The Lakers obviously are struggling. But the crowd that was there was live, man. They were ready for it. They knew Zeke. They appreciated Zeke. And they were just super excited to see him one last time in the house. The house that Isaiah built, really, you know. I mean,
yeah.
He was the one. He was the big star of stars when they built that in 1988 when they finally got into that palace and won the title their first year. But, yeah, he and Blaha were great. It's great to see those two guys who've been through so much together and have seen so much. And basically, you know, Isaiah grew up with Blaha, so he was almost like a father figure to him. So to see them one last time, you know, it wasn't anything like the greatest thing I've ever seen or anything like that. But just special because you knew you would never see this again. Mm-hmm. In the Palace. You know, Zeke might make it out. I don't know what their plans are for the rest of the season, if, like, on the last game of the year they're going to do a big thing or anything like that. But knowing that you might never see this again, and most likely will not, just it was special, man.
Ryan, did he tell any funny stories last night when he sat down with George? I know he brought up a certain moment when they got beat by the L.A. Lakers in the NBA Finals back in 1988, a pretty touching moment between him and another Piston, right?
Yeah, actually, that was about the only story they really did tell. It was kind of very brief because they had a lot of going on there at halftime. But, yeah, every time you talk about Isaiah, and even though they lost that game and lost the series, you got to talk about Game 6, 1988 NBA Finals. Zeke goes down with a twisted ankle and drops 25 in the quarter, an NBA Finals record, and the guy could barely even walk. That never gets old. You never get tired of hearing about that. And, you know, of all things, Zeke did tell another story. He talked about the Palace and he was asked what his favorite memory of the Palace was. And now you got to remember, they didn't win either of their titles at the Palace. They won them in L.A., and in Portland.
Right.
So it was special. That's what made 2004 even more special because they won it at home. But he said his best memory of the Palace was that very first day, that very first game inside the Palace, because they had played at the Silver Dome for years, this giant cavernous, you know, area where you could go, you could pay $5 to sit on the roof and – and that's a true story. You know, you can walk in, $5 gets you in the door.
Wow.
And then they get their own building. State-of-the-art, no building like it. They had three levels of luxury suites at that time. Nobody had that. They were the very first building to ever have that. It's still a state-of-the-art arena, and I'm a little bent that they're moving downtown so soon. I knew it happened eventually. I didn't think it happened yet, but
yeah.
We talked about that very first day when they came in and the crowd was sold out and they were hot and they were ready. And they're like, that set us off, man. We felt like we were unbelievable because we had the best crowd, the best building, the best arena. That's what he said his favorite moment ever was, that day at the Palace, first day.
How cool is that? You know, and I saw an article written by Sean Windsor of the Detroit Free Press today, Ryan. They talked about when they lost in Game 7 to the Lakers in 1988, Bill Laimbeer and Thomas, they were just heartbroken, right? And they could hear Magic and the Lakers celebrating in the other locker room. So Bill Laimbeer decided to go in the hallway. They sneak into the Lakers locker room and steal a bottle of champagne, a bottle of bubbly. They go back to their locker room. They go in the shower, and they just drink champagne and cry in the shower. How cool of a story is that?
That's unbelievable. And that's an unbelievable story. But you know what? You know, you always hear you got to learn to lose before you can win.
Right.
And that's that team's story. You talk about 1987, the steal by Bird. They should have won that series. They should have been in the finals in 1987. Isaiah throws that pass away. Then in 1988, they were up 3-2 going back to L.A., and Isaiah gets hurt. And then in Game 7, the dude could barely move at all, and they lose the series. So they had to learn. They had to take those bumps. And, man, I can't imagine being in that locker room, being in that shower, sitting there watching those two guys. But it's moments like that. You know how it is, man. You've talked to a million athletes. It's stuff like that that feeds the fire. And then the next year, you know, they weren't going to be denied.
So true. Ryan, why is Isaiah still so beloved here in Detroit? What about his personality, his swag on the court and off of it makes him such a storied athlete?
Well, he was, you know, he gets forgotten. You know, everybody talks about the 80s. It's the Jordan, Bird, Magic era, and that's true. Isaiah was number 4 on that list.
Mm-hmm.
He was the 4th, but he had the personality almost of a Magic. No one has the personality Magic had. I mean, he's maybe the all-time personality, but Isaiah is right there. If you talk to this guy, he is so charismatic. He's always smiling. You've seen the clips of him when he's playing the Hawks and he hits the layup, grabs the back of his pants and starts high-stepping, doing the circle underneath the hoop.
Yeah.
You know, he did stuff like that all the time, and he had a million-dollar smile. And he's this little dude. He's tiny.
Right.
He's sorry, AI fans. Zeke is the best little man of all time.
Right.
And It just everything about him, and it helps that you're good too. But he also had that killer instinct. I mean, when they talk about the bad boys, you always hear about Mahorn and you hear about Laimbeer. Those guys will all tell you Zeke was the baddest of the bad boys, and if you crossed him, it was over. I mean, he had that killer mentality. Maybe not quite of Michael Jordan, but it was right there. It's just the total package, man. And he brought us our first titles. That team is the legendary team that no one will ever forget. He was the captain of it, man. I mean, it's just all of that. And then even today, you know, when he was walking around through the crowd, stopping, shaking every single hand, stopping, taking selfies, signing autographs, all this kind of stuff. I mean, you talked about T.O., who, by the way, yeah, definitely is a Hall of Famer, the second best wide receiver of all time.
Who's number one in your book, Ryan? Jerry Rice, right?
Yeah, it got to be Jerry
Rice.
Just checking. Yeah, it got to be Jerry Rice. And so Zeke, I'll tell a story from last year. He was in town for Chauncey Billups' retirement night. And I'd interviewed Zeke, not one-on-one, but, you know, in media scrums a couple of times. Never had a chance to go one-on-one with him. And he was coming off the court after the ceremony. I yelled at him. He's like, yeah, come back here. But I thought he ignored me at first, and he kept walking. And then he's like, hey, come on. I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. So we go back there. I get one question deep into my interview, and the battery dies on my cameraman's camera.
Stop.
Yeah, it died, and I'm like, and Zeke's like, dude, I gotta go. He's like, I gotta get on a plane now. I'm like, all right, no problem. And I told him a little story about when I was a kid. I was at Bill Laimbeer retirement night. I've been to a lot of retirement nights, so I'm at Bill Laimbeer retirement night, he's doing an interview with Blaha at halftime. He gets halfway back across the court to go to his back up to his seat, and I scream, "Hey, Zeke!" He comes back over, signs my autograph for me. Oh, like the bet, you know, just stuff like that.
Oh,
he did the same thing here. 20 years later, does the same exact thing. My camera dies. He's like, "Dude, I gotta go, man. I'm so sorry. I told him that story about when I was a kid." He's like, "Oh man, I can't. Well, hopefully I get to meet you again and see you again." And so he goes walking back to his car. He's about to get into his car to go to the airport. My cameraman comes running back with another battery. He stops getting in the car, door open and everything, comes back, does the interview for 5 minutes with me, gets back in the car, takes off. That's what kind of guy this is. And I know he gets a bad rap because apparently, you know, last night with the Knicks, Charles Oakley, that was Zeke's fault too. You know, everything that's ever happened to the Knicks is Zeke's fault.
Right. So, very true. Very true.
Yeah, it's all his fault, you know.
Everything.
You know, Willis Reed getting hurt in 1971, that
Zeke.
Was Zeke's fault.
That was Zeke, too.
Yeah, that was Zeke's fault.
But,
you know, he gets a bad rap in the CBA and all that, but, you know, and I'm not a business partner with him, but I just know how he treats fans and all that, and that's why he's beloved.
I have to ask this to you, Ryan, with looking at the NBA, because you're an NBA guy just like myself, and watching how the game has evolved over time. How would yesterday's Zeke fare in today's association?
Oh, he would be, you know, he would have to work on his jump shot. He was not a very good three-point shooter. But if you were to drop him in today's game, he probably, you know, he would have evolved like everybody else. He may not be Steph Curry, but I think, knowing the game the way it is, his jump shot would have been better. I think he'd be great in today's game. I really do. If he got that jump shot up 5% more or so, career numbers, I mean, he'd be unreal. And you got to remember, too, as small as he was playing bully ball back in the day like they did, before the Bad Boys were winning titles, he sacrificed his scoring for the team. I mean, he's a guy who was scoring dang near 25 points a game, and then he sacrificed his own numbers for the team later on. So, and you know, look at his career average, and I think it's around 18, 19 a game. So if he was scoring that much at 6 feet tall barely back then, I'm pretty sure he could do that today.
Oh, I think he'll be knocking on the door 30, without a doubt, Ryan.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I'm with you. With the new rules, with the defensive rules now, with the spacing that's out there, as quick as he was, he would be even better,
man.
Honestly.
And now I want to bring this up to close out this interview because, you know, when you have the conversation of Isaiah Thomas, today's generation always brings up what they know of him, right? And a lot of people just haven't seen Zeke play, but they've seen the vintage clips, but they immediately go to, oh, yeah, Isaiah Thomas, he's the guy that – you know, used to run with the Raptors and Knicks, right? You know, ran the two franchises, or he coached. He was the coach, right? And you look at those stints. He didn't fare well when it came to those stints. He looks to be a happy man now. I see him on NBA TV having fun, talking about the game that he loves. But why do you see so many times, Ryan, great athletes not able to make that transition as a coach or GM?
That's a great question, man. I mean, you know, some work, some don't. Joe Dumars worked for a long time. Zeke, you know, Zeke will tell you that they had some pretty darn good draft picks in Toronto. Mm. And he did. Damon Stoudemire was a pretty good pick. Marcus Camby turned out to be a pretty good pick. I believe he drafted Tracy McGrady. I could be wrong on that, but I believe he drafted Tracy McGrady as well.
We'll look that up now.
Toronto.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, he had some good draft picks up there. And the Knicks, they were all – see, I'm so bent about Zeke with the Knicks because they were already a disaster before he got there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't help matters whatsoever, but people in our delusional rewriting history world act like they were the 1973 Knicks and then Zeke came in here and blew them up. That's not the way it works. And Zeke has not been there for dang near 10 years now, and they still are awful. So,
right.
You know, come on. But, you know, it's a tough transition, and especially with a guy like Zeke. Zeke was 32 years old, you know. He didn't play very long because he busted his Achilles, and then he was done. Then he immediately became the Raptors GM, immediately. He's 32 years old. He's a player. I mean, yeah, you know basketball, but, man, putting you in the office and building a team, I mean, that's it's totally different world, you know. It's a completely different world that even one of the greatest players of all time might not quite know the ins and outs of building a team and all that. And I think that's why you see a lot of them fail. And a lot of times with coaches, a lot of the best players aren't good coaches because they can't tell you how to do things. That just comes naturally to them.
Yep.
You know, Michael Jordan, it just comes natural. This is what he does.
Yep.
He doesn't know how to tell you to do it. He can't make you have the instinct and the jumper and the muscle memory that he has, and they don't know how to do it. Poor players can teach you how to do the game. Like, the greats usually can't. Larry Bird, he was a very good coach. He's one who's been able to do it. But, you know, yeah, you're right, man. Not a lot of them can.
Ryan Slocum, sports reporter and anchor for ABC 12 out in Flint. Ryan, thank you so much for taking us inside the palace last night, my friend.
Anytime, dude. I appreciate it whenever you have me on.
He's one of the best. Ryan, appreciate it, dude.
All right, take care, man.
You too. All right, well, we have just, 3 minutes left in today's show. Time flies when you're having fun. Isaac, you heard that conversation. Thoughts on Isaiah Thomas, and you did some quick Googling just now, and Isaiah Thomas was a part of that organization that did draft one of the greatest of all time in my eyes as well, and Tracy McGrady, T-Mac, back in the day. What are your thoughts on Z?
I'd agree, best little man ever, because the thing is, AI, no offense to all the fans of the answer, but no defense there. Isaiah Thomas, one of the best defensive guards of all time, and just found the grit, found the way to get to the basket, found a way to finish. And like Ryan said, it's not as if he was without his due share of injuries as well. Now, his tenure as a management guy and as a coach maybe did muddy that image just slightly of Zeke, but at the same time, this is somebody who grew up and is of the ranks of the Magic Johnsons, the Larry Birds. And it's easy to forget just because he did get lost in that era, swept up in it in many ways, but absolutely a legend. He should have his jersey hanging in, especially in the Raptors of the Palace. There's nothing more fitting.
Got one Throwback Thursday memory for all of our listeners out there. Can we play the A-Rod bite, Isaac?
I wanted to prove to everyone that, you know, I was worth you know, and being one of the greatest players of all time. And I did take a banned substance. And, you know, for that, I'm very sorry.
Yeah, so on this day in sports history, Alex Rodriguez of the New York Yankees admitted that he had taken banned substances from 2001 to 2003. Many moments happen on this day in sports, but I wanted to highlight that one because on tomorrow's Current Sports, we will be having a pretty interesting conversation centered around Mr. A-Rod. That and so much more, same time, same place tomorrow here on WKAR AM 870. You've been listening to Current Sports. Be easy, people.